You're listening to the Texas Standard. When you think about dangerous jobs or workplace violence, somewhere a person on the job may come under verbal or physical abuse, your thoughts likely go to law enforcement, police officers, correctional officers, and the like. And you'd be right, law enforcement is the number one job for workplace violence. But number two may surprise you. Texas Standard intern Sarah Yokley reports for our Spotlight on Health.
The U.S. Department of Labor Statistics says hospitals are the second most dangerous place to be employed in terms of workplace violence. In fact, healthcare providers are four times as likely as other professionals to miss work due to violence-related injury, and they're most likely to experience abuse at the hands of those they're trying to help, their patients. With this in mind, you might think hospitals would have a system in place to protect their workers. But I spoke with a physician's assistant named Jessica who says that often isn't the case. She didn't want me to use her last name for fear of reprisal from her employers, but she told me she didn't realize the threat to healthcare workers until she got her first job.
I can't remember thinking about workplace violence until I worked in triage, to be honest with you. And certainly not in the classroom did we ever talk about it.
Jessica works as a PA and educator in an emergency room in Houston. Before that, she worked in San Antonio. She says there's no standardized system in place to assess, prevent, or reduce violence against doctors or nurses at her workplace.
You know, I don't know if a patient's going to become violent, especially with the population that we work with, because I think it would be one thing if it were, you know, oh, this happens, you know, once a year or something, and it happens all the time.
It's an impending threat that makes Jessica question her choices.
Sometimes I think to myself, like, why am I doing this job when I'm, like, putting myself at risk?
Andrea Palladino has a master's in nursing and works as a clinical assistant professor in the School of Nursing at Texas State. She got her start, much like Jessica, in an ER. And the violence that occurred there came as a shock to her, too.
I was an inpatient acute care nurse at the University of Chicago, which is in Hyde Park, which is a very rough area. I encountered patient violence on the street corner walking from my car into the building. And folks would approach you as they were leaving against medical advice in a gown with an IV in their arm, and they would look for things. So patient violence is something that has been present since I walked on the floor for my first day.
Palladino grew up in the suburbs and says that she didn't have the same moxie her fellow downtown Chicago nurses had to shut down escalating situations. And there wasn't exactly a system in place to deal with instances of verbal and physical abuse, and that took a toll on her.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There were days that I would get done with a shift, and you sit and cry in the bathroom, and you go, holy cow, did I really just do that? And why did they send this patient to the unit without a heads up?
Giving healthcare workers a system for a heads up is precisely the goal of Dr. Sun Che Kim. She's a professor and researcher at the St. David's School of Nursing for Texas State. After witnessing an increase in violence against nurses, she turned to academia to see whether studies had been done.
So I got into research, literature review, and then there's a lack of study that how to prevent, how to identify those patients at risk for violence. So a lot of studies been done reactive.
So Kim decided to do the research she was looking for herself. Through studies in acute care, emergency rooms, and nursing homes, she developed an at-risk for violence scoring system called the Aggressive Behavior Risk Assessment Tool, or ABRAT. Patients receive a score based on a 10-step assessment by their nurses that take into consideration things like their history of violence, age, and diagnosis.
So we know that when they have a cognitive impairment, they cannot control their behavior. So we are accepting their behavior as part of our job. That's why there's a lot of underreporting issue, but we need to change that perception.
She says the first step toward that change is establishing a clear definition of workplace violence for healthcare workers to create a new culture where these instances are not written off as simply part of the job. Assistant Professor Andrea Palladino also wants to get nurses ready for the road ahead so that they aren't left without the skills to address this issue the way that she and Jessica were.
These are very young people, and the notion of going out into an environment that is potentially violent when their goal is to be compassionate and provide care is very, very intimidating. They have a lot of anxiety. They're scared.
That's exactly why Palladino takes her students through simulation scenarios, guiding them through staged incidents of verbal assault to prepare them to de-escalate such situations.
And let them walk through how it feels, not to be hit physically, but the verbal. How to identify triggers, how to look at particular patients and kind of get that internal sense of this might be one of those things that I could benefit from the use of Dr. Kim's tool to early identify the potential risk for violence.
Implementing ABRA into institutions has the potential to improve patient and staff safety, as well as saving hospitals money they may have spent on paid time off for injured workers or replacing those who quit from burnout. It's a change that Jessica recognizes as priority.
The most important thing should be the safety of the staff. You know, obviously the safety of the patients is important. And most important, if we can't be safe, then we can't keep them safe.
I'm Sarah Yokley for the Texas Standard.